Welcome to the Getting Real with Hillary show, where ordinary heroes tell extraordinary stories during unique and never been heard before conversations with your host, Hillary Arno Burns. Hillary's unique listening and way of asking questions results in conversations that aren't usually talked about, so you can create the life that you really want but are afraid you can't really have. We are demonstrating the greatness in the human spirit and creating a world where we all reclaim our birthright of joy, happiness, purpose, and passion. Now, here's your host, Hillary Arno Burns. Welcome to the Getting Real with Hillary show. And today, I'm already crying. We have a very special guest, Ivory, the brilliant caregiver. And she is one of the most special ladies I have ever met. And here's her book that I just read. I am so very, very proud of her. I believe this book can change caregiving in the country, in the world, and really make a difference for not only the caregivers, but for the people they take care of. So welcome, Ivory.
How beautiful an introduction. Tears. I'm glad you're moved. That's what I want my book to do. I want it to move. I'm going to cry. I want it to move people, that they really get the difference caregivers make.
Yeah. And your book was just so, you know, it's filled with, just so people know, it's filled with anecdotes about the difference that Ivory made. She wasn't just there to get paid by the hour. She wasn't just there to feed them. She was there to have these people feel valued and yes, have them still have a purpose and have them not feel like they were out to pasture and didn't matter. And it really, like, with every story, I'm like, wow, this book is incredible. So just thank you for doing it.
And beautiful.
Thank you for being you. Thank you for being that person that, you know, when she saw someone despondent, she figured out a way to get them back to life. And it's just, you know, ingenious and wonderful. And I hope that everyone who has a caregiver, if they can, is a caregiver or has a caregiver taking care of some of their loved ones, that they will grab this book, read it, and see how they can make such a difference in people's lives. No.
Thank you. Beautifully said. Yeah.
Okay.
It's actually very easy. I created a principle in writing a book and I call it, let me see if I remember what I call it. I think I call it coped or something. It's like the principle is be curious about the person you're taking care of. Really curious. Be observant. I have to read you a short story before we leave of how observant I was and how it altered her and everyone around her. So be curious, be observant, be related, because it's easy to take care of someone. Not always, but sometimes it's easy. Oh, you found it. Oh, yes. Thank you. Curious, observant, related, and playful. If you're related, the person senses that they matter and all of us want to matter. And often that's missing. And the last part is be playful, not significant. We get very significant when we're taking care of another because we want them not to have pain. We want them to survive. But if we can bring play into it, all that other stuff disappears and humor comes. And humor is healing and laughing is healing. So that's the principle that I worked with when I took care of
people. Okay. So I'm going to be the devil's advocate. Because this is what I was thinking as I read the book. Now, let's say I'm a caregiver, you know, maybe I'm not getting paid that much. I'm exhausted. I got things I got to do. I got to feed them. I got to maybe change them, you know, wipe them places I never thought I'd be wiping. And
yes,
now you expect me to play with them. You expect me to listen to them. You expect me to treat yes, them as a person. I mean, come on. I mean, and I know that sounds terrible, but, you know, my mom has, she's had a few caregivers and, you know, they're 24/7. So it's a different story. They're not fresh when they come in. They've been there, you know, they hope she sleeps late so they get a break. So it's a different, you know, and I know you did have some 24/7s, but like, I would be afraid that they wouldn't
And it sounds terrible that they wouldn't be interested in asking those questions of my mom or pay. I mean, and it sounds terrible and it's sad.
It's true.
But they're just trying to get through the day.
Absolutely.
They're trying to survive. So how it, and let me answer my own question. You know, when I was thinking about it, I was like, you know, that's terrible that I think they wouldn't be interested. However, if they were, they would have much more fun.
Yes.
They would be less stressed.
Yes, they'd be less stressed. They'd be more invigorated. The fun brings the ease.
Yeah, they would be enjoying their lives instead of like, oh my God, I got to get her here. I got to get her there. Now I got to get her fed. I got to give her the bath, you know, the shower, you know, and it's always like, and there's not much joy. And when I go into that house, I feel distressed. Like, and I don't like it. You know, it's like, okay, we got to move to the next thing. Well, where are you going? You know? So I guess my very long-winded question is how would we introduce this to people who are not highly paid, exhausted, and think, you know, just don't, I don't want to hear it, you know, like how? So that's my question.
Yeah. Now you addressed everything. I can remember those times when I was exhausted and I couldn't bear what was next. So I know what you're saying. The only way that worked for me was I made it a game. So yes, I might have been exhausted and when is this going to be over? But I knew that if I continued thinking like that, the day would be worse. It would be more exhausting. The stress I would be operating up against would make it even worse for the person I was caring for. But if I made it a game and took away, okay, I'm going to start from zero. Whatever my day began with, I'm putting it behind me. I'm starting with a clean slate. It takes something to think that way. But there are such advantages when you think that way. I'm going to start with a clean slate. And I'm going to play a game today. The game is, who is this person I'm caring for today? I might have been caring for her for 6 months or a year, but I know very little about her because I didn't inquire. So my game today is, let me find out who this person is. Let me start a conversation with her, if she can have a conversation, and ask her some questions. And I might just say, want to play a game with me today? I figured it'd be more fun if we played a game together. And the game is, let's get to know each other. You must wonder about me the way I wonder about you. Do you have any questions for me about me? I have loads of questions for you. You start as a game. So you don't bring all the stress from the past times together or the earlier morning person you worked with. You don't bring that in because you have to start from a clean slate. In any area of life we always bring the past with us. And that's what creates the problems and the stress. So you start with the game. And if the
question.
Yes.
So you're walking up the door.
Yes.
You know, you just had a flat tire or whatever you had, you know, traffic, you were going through the mountains and you're all stressed out. How do you leave it at the door?
Yes.
I mean, obviously you have to be aware. How do you do it?
There are so many programs now about meditation and how to get grounded. And sometimes we say, oh, another one of those programs, but they're valuable because they do teach us how to, in this very stressful time we're living, they teach us how to get grounded, how to calm down in the middle of all this chaos. And we have to do that. We have to take a moment, as you just did, take a deep breath, just relax, feel the tension in your body. Oh my God, I've got tension in my neck. Let me just take a deep breath into there. I don't want to bring how I'm being now into that space and have more of it. So I've just got to imagine. My favorite place is when I lived in Tiburon, was sitting right on the edge of the bay on a bench with a book. And whenever I'm stressed, I bring myself back to that bench in Tiburon, in the park, with the leaves of the trees blowing and the water down in front of me. And just that visual calms me down. And then I've begun to be prepared for entering, I don't know what. I could be entering craziness and upset, but at least I'm not bringing more of that into the situation. So yes, you do have to take a moment, get grounded. If you don't meditate, that's fine. Just breathe deeply and relax and notice where in your body you're holding tension and say, I'm relaxing. That's what it requires. Something as simple.
Beautiful. No, that's beautiful. Okay. And the second question is, when, let's say, you know, you coming into me, let's say I'm your patient or whatever you call them, and you're saying, you know, you want to play a game. I mean, was everyone like, all right, or like, who are you? No. And why are you doing this to me? Like, were they open? Like, or did you have to grow on them? So I would think it depends on their personality. Right?
Yeah, not always. No, it's like, no, I just want to have breakfast. No, I just want to watch my program. Okay. You have to honor that. It's a no. But it doesn't mean you stop playing. You still continue to play. Okay, she wants to have her breakfast. So I serve her breakfast and then I say, oh, would you remind me, do you like your eggs fried, boiled, broiled, or sunny side up? That's the beginning of the inquiry of getting to know her, but I'm coming in almost like the back door. She might say, you know, every morning I have them scrambled. And I say something like, oh my goodness, you know, I'm getting older and my memory's not as good. Scrambled? I'm sorry. Now I remember scrambled. You bring in play. Right. Any way you can, you bring in play. You don't make things significant. And that's what we tend to do, is make so much of our lives significant, which creates the stress, the upsets.
Yeah. And I know I don't think they'll watch this, but some of them, you know, because we have my mom. So we've had like three, you know, long-term people, 2 years, 1 year, and 1 year. And
it's good long-term.
But some of them would take it personally, or they'd be fighting with her and having, she says this, like complaining about my mother to me in front of her.
Okay. You've addressed something very important. There are so many courses now on communication and transformation. And I think if caregivers did some of these courses, they too would learn how to be with another person without taking it personally. So if they haven't done these courses, then everything becomes important and significant. And she said this and they did that. And it gets out of hand. I'm so blessed. At the age of 15, I had the wisdom that there's got to be something more than I'm seeing. I'd read the paper. It's like, oh my God, so many wars, so many crimes. So I began inquiring, what does it take to have a good life? What does it take to have a peaceful life, a healthy life? And in that process, I began to learn how to be with others, how to be with myself. And so now when I'm with an elder, I understand them a lot. Or can accept them. Much of it is accepting. I don't like how you're treating me. I don't like how you're talking to me. But I'm not going to fight with her or him. I'm not going to say, don't talk to me like that. I'm just going to notice that's their upset. They're going through stuff. That's how they're communicating. I have a board here, and whatever they're saying stops at the board. But I can still be with them because I'm not taking it personally. That's a big lesson to learn and to bring into your caregiving. If you don't take what's being said personally, it's so much easier to get through the day and be with that person, because you're not upset, you're not angry, and you're not carrying it on, so you have to bring it to the family member and then upset the family member. It's an important key. Don't take anything anyone says to you personally, unless it's loving. If it's loving, that's a whole different situation. Of course you welcome it. But if it's not loving, I hear her, she's upset, or she's hurting, or she's irritated, but it's not about me personally. I'm just the sounding board. And it's good to be the sounding board. You give them the freedom to express themselves. Sometimes the person is so hurting, they have to say something to someone. And I'm in front of them, and I'm going to get it. But I don't absorb it. I don't take it on. I hear it. Does that help?
It helps, but I don't know. I mean, it helps me, but I'm not the one in the I'm not the caregiver. You know, I'm just watching, and I know, you know, since we're talking about my mother, you know, she asks a lot of questions. And because of her dementia, she asks the same question over and over again. So I'm sure it's not easy.
No, it's not easy. And I'm not saying this is a breeze. It is a challenging, challenging job. And you can grow a lot from this job. Learning to be with someone is challenging in the first place, but learning to be with someone who's dealing with dementia or illness or aging, it's a challenging position. And how I as the caregiver deal with it will make the world of a difference for how my health remains strong and I remain well. And I want to do more of this kind of work, and how the person in front of me can be quieter, more peaceful, more at ease rather than stressed. My job is to bring ease. Yeah. Mm.
Yeah. And I think, you know, like for me, when I'm with my mother, obviously she's my mother, so you have that going on. But, yes. You know, when she asks the same question, like, for example, she doesn't remember where I live. So I sing my address to the tune of Three Blind Mice every time. And she'll laugh. So I get playful, and that's much better for me. It's much better for her. Yes. She likes music, and I got that more from, you know, we'll sing. Like if we're driving, we'll sing around, and it's fun, you know. And that's what I know. That's what you did in your book. If somebody liked, you know, all different kinds of music, you would have it playing in the house, which made it a lively atmosphere again. So I think it's like, you know, first you have to have, like when you said, when you get to the door, you have to have the presence of mind to bring play. You know, you're almost stepping out of your own self and your reactions and your, you know, mourning and all that, and stepping into play. And you said ease, you know, which I think can change the whole dynamic. And I wish, you know, these people, and I'm not complaining about them. I give them a lot of credit. You know, the ones I've only seen, the ones that we've had, that they would have more of a sense of humor.
Well,
instead of getting the job done, which makes my mother this thing instead of a human. Yeah,
exactly.
Who is a very, very accomplished person, but instead she's treated like a bad girl, and you know, didn't finish your play, you know, whatever. Like she's treated like she's this bad girl, and it breaks my heart because I know who she is. And I don't know how to talk to them about this without getting them defensive. And, you know, I'm sure there's other people too that see this in their caregivers. It's not just me, but do it so that they don't get on the defensive and you can introduce play? I don't know.
The way we operate is, we're always on the defensive. That's just the way we humans operate, because we think we're bad most of the time. So we're trying to defend ourselves. There's no way, there's nothing. All you can do is educate them. Maybe you can take 10, 15 minutes a day during their time with your mother and say something like, listen, this is something I learned and it's making a difference with me. I wonder if you would try this. Just try it. Try it for this time with my mother. Try it for the next time you come. See if you notice a difference. Because I, like you, am looking how to have a relationship with my mother that's with more ease. And I know your job is stressful. You want to acknowledge the job is stressful. I know your job is stressful, but let's try this and see if it works. And if it doesn't, we might try something else. And the first thing is, like, don't take things personally. There was an exercise I did once, and I loved it, at a course on communication. They had someone sit in front of you, looking straight in your eyes and saying a lot of gobbledygook, but putting some emotion behind it, like, and you wanted to see how you felt, because could you feel the anger? And if you feel the anger, you had no idea what they were saying. They could have been saying, I love you, but you're a pain in the butt. It's to watch how you react to others and not add anything. And we're always adding. And what we're adding is, I did something wrong. I shouldn't have done that. Rather than, I did what I knew to do. I did the best I could. And maybe you just have to spend a few minutes educating them, if they're willing. If they're not, then this is what you've got to work with. It's
right. Well, here's an example. And I know when you had some of your people, you would cook with them and you would do all this stuff. All my mother wants, and I know I'm talking about my mother because she's on my mind.
That's good. It's a real example.
Yeah. So, you know, all she ever wants to do is help. But when this particular person is cooking, she's like, get out of here. Like, she doesn't want her around. She won't let her help. She sends her to watch TV. And it's like, oh, you know, when she comes over here, I'm like, okay, Mom, I mean, it helps me, but I'm like, all right, let's fold the laundry. She's a great folder and she gets to be helpful. Or let's water the plants or let's do that. And she gets to help. And she feels useful.
We all,
instead of shunned. Yeah.
We all want to make a difference. We all want to belong. We all want to feel part of something. And when the caregiver says, get out of here, it must be a horrible feeling. And it's lovely what you're doing. You're including her. You find the easiest task for her to do, but you're giving her a purpose. I noticed in a lot of the facilities where I would work, they had entertainment galore, but they had no purpose. And you'll see there are a couple of stories in the book where two men discovered for themselves a purpose. And they loved it. The purpose was simple, opening a door or calling someone and saying you have a package. But they had a purpose. And I think all of us feel we want to be needed, and a purpose has us feel we want to be needed. So with the
I don't know if it matters why, but why do you think that when someone gets old, we forget who they were?
Yeah.
We forget their accomplishments and they have feelings.
Yes.
You know, we talk about them like they're not there. And you know, it's like, I don't know. I mean, maybe it's not important why, but I think it's important that we remind ourselves how important these people are and that they're people. They're not these things that got old.
Not only are they people, they are people who built this country. They are people who built this world. They are people who spent 40, 50 years of their lives waking up every morning at 9, working till 5 or 6, most of their life just working and making a difference. And most of the time, they're not acknowledged. Their employers don't acknowledge them. The society doesn't acknowledge them. And then we say, thank you at 65. You've done your job. Go hide somewhere. Oh, my goodness. I was just fixing myself. Excuse me.
No, but you know, that brings me to that's an important point that you were just doing that. I'm going to write that down because there's something I want to bring up about that in your book. But how, you know, I think my nose runs when I cry. That's why we call it getting real. But you know, how do we remind people that older people are people? Mm. They're just older. And we, God willing, will get there one day too. Mm-hmm. And that we want to be treated with respect and remembered for our accomplishments and what we've done. How do we get that word out besides your book?
We're in a society that caters to the younger people. So the focus is not there. And the only way we can do it is to brag. We have to brag about the elders in our lives. Do you know that my mother was a WAC during World War II? And she had so much courage. I can't believe what she did. I'd never have the courage to do that. And so you're opening a conversation. A WAC? What do WACs do? Or, you know, my mother was a doctor. I met someone recently. She's 90 and she was a doctor. And you look at her and you see an old lady, a doctor. She had people's lives in her hands. So I think the only way to do it is just to brag, acknowledge the people around you and talk about them, write about them. I don't know where else to go with it. And that's why I liked working with elders. I just feel they need to be cared for. And it's my way of acknowledging them for the life that they gave for all those years to have this country be the extraordinary country it is.
Mm. So that's beautiful. Yeah. The other thing, when you said, you know, you're fixing your bra straps, the thing that it was at the beginning of the book and you had wet yourself, let's just say, and girls were laughing at you and you were horrified, but you know, and you know, maybe things like constipation or topics that are not discussed, and you, instead of making them about the patients, you made them about yourself. And I thought that was so courageous and so wonderful that you could put, like, instead of it being shameful, I mean, you know, when I can't remember something, I'm like, oh no.
Yeah.
You know, am I getting dementia? I get worried and I, you know, I think I try to hide it instead of what you say is just, oh, I forgot. Hey, boom, no big deal. But like things like that things that normally happen to the body, instead of having shame, that it could be something that's talked about so people can find other ways of dealing with them. instead of hiding them, you know?
Not so, just dealing with them, but recognizing that we're human and I'm like you and you're like me. This, you know, it's like, that's what's so. And the other, I just told the story yesterday and the person was surprised I told the story. But it seemed to me very natural. I was coming home from being away the whole day, didn't have a chance to go to the bathroom. And you know, most of us know that as we get older, the muscles down below are not as strong. And so we have to do the Kegel exercises or there are consequences. Well, I haven't been doing Kegel recently. And I was walking from Lexington to Third Avenue and I'm feeling droplets. I'm going, oh my God, I don't know if I'm ever going to make it home. And little by little, I just started releasing and I was shocked. I was hoping it wasn't evident. It wasn't. But I was also giggling. It's like, God, is this what it is? To be older. I'm getting older and this kind of stuff is happening. And then I told someone yesterday and she laughed because she shared an incident, a similar incident. And I just felt a profound connection that another woman would share that with me because I opened the door and shared it with her. If we could be more real with each other, we'd be happier with ourselves. It's about being happy with ourselves and acknowledging this is the way it is. I'm forgetful now. I've been forgetting so much. I've got papers all around me. I've got clocks ringing and my telephone reminding me. This is the way it is. Maybe I'm taking supplements that will help. But if it doesn't help, this is the way it is. And I've had to ask a lot of people in my life, I'm noticing I'm forgetting. I'm doing the best I can to remind myself, and I might forget. Please don't make me wrong. Just say you forgot our appointment. Do you want to reschedule? And it's working because in the beginning I was going, oh no, did I forget that? And then you forgot. But people, when you share yourself authentically, they can acknowledge that they too have that experience. And we're all just being human, learning to be human. I'm learning to be an older woman. What an experience this is.
Now that's great because I think when we hide it, then we feel like we're bad. Then we feel like we screwed up and it's this whole drama and it's whole stressful thing on our body that isn't necessary if we can just say, hey, you know, I know if I sneeze since I had kids, I got to cross my legs.
Yes, yes.
And I'm just like, oh my God, cross my leg. And then I'm like, whew, made it. Okay, good. So I made it a joke because if I don't cross my legs, I know what's going to happen, you know? Yes. And, you know, it's kind of like when you have menopause and all of a sudden you're like, you know, that's why you have to wear layers because you're taking them off as soon as you get a hot flash. You know, I think that's more in the mainstream now. We don't have to hide that as much as probably, you know, when my mother was young. I don't think she would have talked about it. She would have just acted poised, been sweating and not say a word, you know.
Even the advertisements are allowing more of this to be visible. There are advertisements for women wearing these panties with liners and they look gorgeous. They stand like they're modeling a gorgeous dress.
Yeah.
And you're modeling panty liners. It's amazing. I love the names they give them though. Poise.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah.
But yeah.
We're being more in the open about these things.
And I think that's really helpful because I think people feel ashamed.
Yes.
And then they're going to hide it.
Yes.
And then they're not going to get help for it because they don't want to tell anyone.
Right.
And I think, you know, getting real, as you say, is about acknowledging it. And once you share, I know, once you share, you get freedom.
Exactly.
Because you're no longer hiding it, because that takes a lot of energy,
yes.
You know? Yeah.
So I do want to add something. I talked about bringing play, but it's not always easy. I don't want to have you think that I had an easy time for the, 25, 30 years. A lot of it was demanding, but I learned to be with it. I learned to play with it. I learned to bring a way of being that had it easier for me. So I just thought I'd add that. And Hillary.
Yeah, thank you. I wanted them back to be able to see your plants and how lovely you had it all set up. But now we are so close up that they don't get to see it. So anyway.
We did for a moment, yeah. And then you talked a moment ago about music. There's so much written now about the difference that music makes in healing. So you want to find out the kind of music that the person you're with enjoys and have that in the background. You can ask them what they enjoy. Sometimes they just want quiet, but music is healing. And there are several stories in the book where I was so surprised. The one woman in particular who had Alzheimer's, who seemed to be unconscious, never reacted to anything. As soon as I put on the music that she loved, her body moved. And you could see her eyes didn't open, but her body moved. You could see that she would hear it. Wow. And there was like a life came back to her. Yeah.
Wow. All right. Well, and there's more. There's so much more we can say. But for right now, we're going to take our commercial break, and then we're going to be right back with more with Ivory.
Has social-emotional learning become just one more thing on your teachers' plates? Do teachers and students both find it boring and ineffective? Then bring Kikori to your school. Kikori transforms classrooms through experiential SEL activities that help students play, reflect, connect, and grow. Even better, students say it's more fun than recess. Schedule a no-obligation conversation at kikoriapp.com/bringkikori. K-I-K-O-R-I.
Do you ever feel like you can't say what you really want to say? Or that you're stuck or in a holding pattern in your relationships, career, personal life, or finances? Are there things you want in life that you've given up on? Are you resigned that this is as good as it's going to get? If you answered yes to any of these questions, then Hillary Burns, host of the Getting Real with Hillary show, has the solution you need. Hillary is a published author of 3 books and has a program called the Getting Real Process. This process frees you from what is holding you back, allowing you to create a life you love. Don't believe it? It is hard to believe that it could work, isn't it? The proof is that hundreds of Hillary's clients have used the Getting Real Process and are now free to create whatever they want in relationships, career, finances, enjoying life, or just loving themselves more. So go to realtalkwithhillary.com and order Hillary's book, Real Talk, and set up a conversation.
Thank you, as always. Well, welcome back to the Getting Real with Hillary show. And as always, thank you to Kikori. App.com. I'm not even sure if I'm saying it right or if they changed it, but Kikori is a way to bring experiential social emotional learning to your schools, to your teams, to your businesses. And what that does is create connection, creates people being social, and really creates what we're talking about with Ivory today is knowing people and being able to be yourself and not having that shame and not feeling separate. That's what Ivory brings to her caregivers. And really, it's such a great thing. And as always, I have to shamelessly promote my books. Your bullshit is your blessing. If you ever have felt that there's something wrong with you and you've been trying to fix yourself, this one's for you. If that's called Your Bullshit is Your Blessing, this one, Real Talk, again, like we're talking about, if you have shame and you don't want to tell anyone, find this book. It's called the Getting Real Process, and you will get free by being able to talk and call me if you're afraid. I was there. I certainly understand, and I don't judge. You can reach me, Hillary, at gettingrealwithhillary.com with one L, and I'm happy to talk to you. It's my favorite thing to do. And then this is my memoir, The Second Piece of French Toast. If you're stuck in a marriage and you don't know what happened to your life, or you just want some inspiration or a really good story, you can get this one, The Second Piece of French Toast, and you can find them all on Amazon, along with Ivory's book. And here she is, and we'll both hold it up.
Oh,
The Brilliant Caregiver by Ivory.
Notice the two different colors. Amazon made a boo-boo. So we got a gray, a beige one, and a pink one.
Interesting. See, I think this is brown, but okay. I guess it does look pink on here. Interesting.
The thing about the book is they're very, very short stories. A page and a half. So you could flip it open like this and already read something that'll make a difference. You don't have to sit for hours and read.
Right. And each story, yeah, is one. You could just read one page before bed and you will go to bed feeling happy and delighted.
I'm wondering if I can read a one page story and show you the impact.
Sure. All right. I'm going to take myself out so we can see your plants and I'll come back when you're done. Take it away, Ivory.
Thank you. This is called Mrs. Cooking. Mrs. Cooking, in her 80s, spent her days watching television all day and got excited when cooking shows came on. She'd say to me, so engrossed, interrupting me when I wanted to say something to her. We'll talk after the show. I noticed how important those shows were to her and how much she liked to cook and discover new recipes. Recuperating from having an operation, she had plenty of time to catch up on the latest TV shows and was spending her entire days mesmerized, even eating meals in front of the television. Looking for a way to get her more active, I suggested we go grocery shopping and prepare lunch together a few times a week. It worked. She enthusiastically looked forward to doing that. Then, one day at the supermarket, on the bulletin board was an advertisement. A local Italian restaurant was offering cooking classes. I thought this just might be the next incentive to get Mrs. Cooking out of the house and away from the long days in front of the television. Little did I realize how passionate she was about cooking, and when I suggested she take the class, she jumped at the opportunity and enrolled eagerly. That was only the beginning. One day, after I picked her up from the class, she said to me, you know what? I've been thinking, what if I had my own cooking show? What a difference from watching television all day long to wanting her own cooking show. Life was returning. Astonished and delighted, I thought it a unique idea that would definitely have her more engaged and suggested, let's mull this over after you've watched your 3 o'clock show. Mrs. Cooking never did have her own show. After we talked about all she'd have to do to launch it, she felt it was much too work for her. But instead, she began to advertise in her church community and became known as the church caterer, preparing delectable Italian dishes for all their upcoming social events, getting lots of help from the community and teaching the young ones how to cook. Her future became a chef rather than a couch potato. Thank you for listening. So I'm bringing that up because it was the fact that I observed the principal observing and noticing what was important to her. Cooking was important. Food was important. And because I noticed that, then I noticed the sign for the cooking class, which she took. And then we had the conversation about where to go with it. And her whole way of being changed, and she became alive and vibrant. 80's not old, but for some people it is. And because they have no purpose or nothing to do. And many of my clients initially began by watching television all day long. That's all they saw in front of them until something else was presented. So this was very exciting.
Yeah,
to watch her blossom like that.
And the book had so many stories like that. I think, the ones where they, they loved walking, but then all of a sudden they got afraid to walk. And it wasn't what you thought, or it wasn't what their kids thought. And by Ivory, by being the caring detective, he found out what it was, right? Do you want to tell them?
Do I remember? No.
All right, I'll tell them. So for one
Which
guy,
story was it?
Well, you thought.
Wait. Was that the one where she was going to go pee-pee?
Yeah, well, it was the man. Yeah. I think a lot of them, it's not that they're, they did fall, but then they're afraid that they won't be able to find the bathroom, especially after COVID, when they stop letting you use them. And, you know, then they become couch potatoes and they're afraid to move. So Ivory was really brilliant, the brilliant caregiver, at asking them questions and digging deeper beyond the surface to really find out what was going on. And that was just, you know, as you say, brilliant. So thank you for teaching us all that, because it's, you know, it's not always what we think. Yes. Most of the time it's not. Right?
Really? Yeah. Yes.
Right. Now, one of my favorite stories, if I can say, and I know you have a whole past that we never got to, but was one of the gentlemen who she was introduced to, right, by his daughter, right?
Oh, yes.
And she ended up gardening with him and taking care of him. And then he asked her to move in. And guess what? Then they got married. So at what age? At 60, you got married, right? And it was just such a beautiful, beautiful story. And she didn't tell us what happened at the end. But anyway, I guess obviously he passed away and then you came back here.
He did.
Yeah.
He did.
Yeah. Yes.
That was painful. I didn't expect that to happen. I mean, I know we all go, but I felt he was still young at 91. Because he was so vibrant. He was so intelligent and just generous and laughed a lot. And just, you know, it's a surprise.
Yeah. Oh.
But...
So yeah, so your background, Ivory, you worked at a law firm for all those years, and then at some point they asked you to retire, I guess, and that's where
I came down with a carpal tunnel and I couldn't type anymore.
Right.
And the biggest part of a secretary's life, even a legal secretary, is typing and typing fast and getting all these briefs done, and I couldn't do that anymore. And it just altered my life completely. That's all I knew to do.
Right. And then, so you were looking at, I think it was a sales job. And then the woman, you know, you had said, I had never done this. And then the woman said, well, I mean, that was, you know, she said, well, I need someone to take care of what her mother, I think, or her father. And that's how you got into caregiving. That was like,
that was
amazing. Right. Mm-hmm. Who knew?
Propitious. Yeah, no. She said, I need a caregiver. I haven't found one. Would you take care of my mother until I find a caregiver? And I said, I've never done this before. And she said, it's like babysitting. So she made it sound easy. What she didn't tell me is her mother was depressed, wasn't getting out of bed. And so because I needed a place to live, I'd been house sitting. I've been eating in soup kitchens. When I left the law firm and that salary and the job, everything changed. I moved out of a beautiful home. Anyway, she was offering me a stipend, a beautiful house, because she had to rent a house near hers where her mother could live. So if I thought, okay, I'll do this until we find the caregiver for her mother, and then I'll just do what's next. I'll find the next job I can take. And in the process of taking care of her mother, I found that I had a calling, because her mother would not get out of bed. I love this story, because her mother would not get out of bed. She stayed on the couch in the living room facing the wall. The only time she moved was when her daughter came and brought her a smoothie, which contained the products, vitamins that her daughter was selling that I was considering selling, because I'd eaten those too and they were good. So I began to ask her daughter questions. Tell me about your mother. There's the curiosity. And I learned that one of her favorite things to do was to watch Bob Barker and a quiz show. And she loved Bob Barker. And every day, no matter what, at 11 o'clock, she was in front of that TV. So I asked her daughter to buy us a little TV, which I put right next to the couch. And at 11 o'clock in the morning, I put it on and she heard the voice of Bob Barker. And she moved toward the TV. And every day at 11 o'clock, I had Bob Barker and the quiz show on. And she came back to life. She'd moved closer to the TV. She began paying attention. And then her daughter, who was about to give birth, I suggested that she bring the baby over so that her mother could hold the baby while she was watching Bob Barker. And that was the key. She was so proud to be a grandmother and enjoying herself with Bob Barker, she just came back to life. And that was the beginning of her getting up and being more normal. And it took about a year, but then she she looked beautiful. I have before and after pictures. She put on weight. She was happy again because she was mourning. And the baby diverted her, perhaps, from the mourning.
So her husband had died? Is that what happened?
Oh, yeah. Well, it's in the book. Yeah, 45 years of marriage, her husband had died. And she went into a depressed state. Yeah, and just didn't want to participate anymore. And then Bob Barker, the quiz show, and the baby brought her back to life. And so if I hadn't asked those questions, I wouldn't have known. And I don't know where she would be. Yeah. It made my work more enjoyable as well. As you called me detective, I am inquisitive and I like being a detective. It's exploring what's possible.
Yeah.
It's an interesting game to play.
Yeah. Well, yeah. And you, so by accident, you found your calling. And look what made for all those people, you know. You didn't just let her lie there. So that's incredible.
Yeah.
So thank you.
So after that year, I went to senior centers to look on the bulletin board to see if anyone was looking for help. And I don't remember how I got my next position, but it was most of the time was word of mouth. And so I continued doing that, a live-in caregiver.
So did you, so when you, so obviously when you were at the law firm, and then you had no job, and then, I mean, you were eating at soup. I mean, that must have been a shock to your system to go from, you know, being a secretary and then all of a sudden nothing.
A good income, especially.
What'd you say?
A good income. Yeah. Secretaries, legal secretaries have a good income.
Well, that must have been a rude awakening, but I think it's very inspiring for other people who may have that kind of shock. To go from a very good income to, oh my God, what am I going to do? And not go down the tubes, you know, with self-doubt and worry. You know, I know when I was young, but one of the firms I worked for down on Wall Street went bankrupt one day. And I remember it was like I had amnesia about any value I ever had. I couldn't remember anything I could do. I mean, it really was terrifying. And, you know, eventually I did get rehired by them and I did move on, but I remember it was like the bottom fell out. You know, I had never had to be concerned about that before. And then all of a sudden it brought this fear that I had never had. So, you know, how did you, I know you did go to that appointment, but what kept you going until you found the caregiving? Would you say?
I mentioned earlier in this interview that I took a lot of courses on communication and how to be a more peaceful human being or how to deal with life. Those courses created a strong foundation that I could count on for those emotional, unexpected times. One in particular, you might have heard of it, is called Landmark Worldwide. I did that course in the late 70s. And it was a blessing because I felt tortured prior to that by how the world was functioning, how people were always angry with each other, how there were wars and poverty. And I kept on saying throughout my early teens, is this the world I have to grow up into? Is this what I'm going to experience for the rest of my life? And the only fresh breath I could get is when I did those courses. Or you read books on philosophy, and philosophy tells you how to be with life in another way. Most of us are just raised by what our parents know, what their parents knew. So there's no freedom to express oneself or learn about another way of being. We act automatically. If someone says something nasty to you, you take offense and reply in a nasty way. That's what we've learned to do, as opposed to someone says something nasty to me. It doesn't have anything to do with me. They're in pain. I just listen to them and then go on with life. We don't usually react like that, but that I learned to do that has enabled me to function in this world where we're always reacting to something and someone. And in the Landmark Forum, I discovered so much about how to have an extraordinary life, how not to bring my past pain into my present or into my future. And so, yes, my life is not always easy and stressful, but most of the time I can be with it in a way that doesn't use me up, make me ill.
Mm. And
Yeah,
so when you went in thinking, is this the kind of world I have to live in? How did you come out of that landmark forum? Like, what was
Oh,
the difference?
goodness. I was in love with possibility. I saw things and ways of being that would be so much easier. I hate to say this, but most of my life, I didn't love my mother. And I didn't love my mother because she was an angry person. And it was hard being with her because she was so angry all the time. And I couldn't be with her a lot of the time. And I missed having a mother, but I took myself away a lot. And in the forum, I just realized, oh my goodness, she had an angry mother who probably had an angry mother. And they've just carried it on. And she knows no other way of being. She knew no other way to express herself. But when I remembered she was a beautiful, she had red hair. When I remembered she was a beautiful little 2-year-old or 3-year-old or 4-year-old with red hair and lots of energy, my heart broke. And I remembered there was a beautiful little child there that was looking forward to an incredible future. And then her father made her marry someone she didn't love. And then that man beat her. She had a lot of reason to be angry. And when I saw that, my heart broke and compassion showed up. And I could be with her more compassionately, with more love, rather than, she's such an angry person, I don't want to be around her. Now it was, I had more understanding of where all that anger came from. She hadn't done the courses that I had done. She didn't know how to be with that anger. She didn't know how to be with that pain. At 15, her father told her she had to marry this man when she was totally in love with someone else. And she obeyed her father because she loved her father. And then this man didn't treat her respectfully. And so, where else could she go but into anger? And then I got that. So that was one of the many pieces I got. I just understood people more after that course. That allowed me to be more compassionate and more tolerant. And I'm sure that contributed to my being a caregiver.
Yes. So that's where you learned it, right there. Now, did your mother stay with him?
Yes. And she, oh, well, let's say, I don't know who's him. No, she didn't stay with him. She divorced him when I was four, and then she married someone else.
Okay, good.
And she stayed with him in both until the end of both of their lives.
Oh,
Yeah.
okay.
Yeah.
Well,
Yeah.
Ivory, this has been so fantastic. We have just a few minutes left, and I want you to be able to. What's the difference you want to make? What do you want to see in 5 years? What do you want for the planet? That kind of thing. And I know you've already given us so much, but just if you could put
Thank
it in a
you.
nutshell, go ahead.
Okay. What I learned caring for others, I want to pass on to everyone else. And I think that, I don't think, I'm sure that when you read the book and you see possibilities that you might not have seen before, you could bring that into how you're being with others, not just those you're caring for, but how you can be with others. And I feel that this book can uplift, especially the occupation of caregiving. Caregivers are not, I hate to make a generality, but caregivers are not really respected. They're not paid well. They're not acknowledged. And I feel that if you read this book, you will want to acknowledge the caregivers you know. You'll want to pay them better, and they will appreciate themselves more. So I'd like to see worldwide transformation of caregiving, how we care for others, and what we can bring that would make the caregiver happier and the person they're caring for happier. So I'd like everyone to buy my book and pass it on to other. Everyone's a caregiver. Everyone's caring for their husband, their wife, their mother, their father, their kids, their dogs. We're all caregivers. We just don't call ourselves caregivers, or we're not doing it professionally, but we're always caring for someone. And if we could bring qualities to that caregiving that uplift both the person who's caring and being cared for, it could make a phenomenal difference. That's what I'd like to see. I'd like to see that. Yeah.
Well, thank you
Simple.
so. Yeah, that's so beautiful. And what would you say your purpose is?
To be a catalyst for transformation, for uplifting the occupation of caregiving and to uplift the caregiver and the person they're caring for. That's really my job is my book is the catalyst. I, as a writer, am the catalyst. And now it's up to you. And if you get the book and you read a story or two, then you share the story and someone learns from that story. There's another way they can be. There's something else they can do. And caregiving, it seems to me, has a darkness over it. I'd like to bring some light to that area. Mm. Yeah. So someone can say, I'm caring for my mother. It's challenging, but I'm learning how to be with her in a different way. That's making it easier for her as well as for me. Mm. Yep, yep, yep.
Well, thank you, Ivory. I really just want to thank you, you know, for writing this book, for who you are, for who you've been, for all those people that you cared for, and your courage and tenacity in, you know, dusting off those stories that you've been collecting for so many years and putting it into a book that we can all read. So thank you. Thank you for making a huge difference for the world.
And thank you for appreciating it.
You're very welcome.
It's been my pleasure being with you.
Thank you. Bye, everyone. See you next week.
Thank you for watching this episode. I started getting real with Hillary when I discovered that I was a people-pleasing, pleasant phony and wanted to be more of my real self. We can grow together. If you will like the show, subscribe to my channel, and share this episode with your friends and family so that we can have a world that's more real.